Hello, everyone, and welcome to the JavaScript for WordPress show. I'm educator Zach Gordon, and in this show, I talk with influencers in the field of JavaScript and WordPress about people's experience, how they became experts in the field, and their advice for all the rest of us. Now, I am really excited to have our guest on today that we have. If you've worked inside the WordPress admin area, you've probably touched some of his work from working in core. He works on the WordPress core security team, as well as being a lead engineer at 10Up, so you know he has that professional experience. I think with that little introduction, let's bring on Adam Silverstein. Hello and welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, good to be here.
So, Adam, you know, that's a kind of short introduction for folks to what you do, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself outside of the WordPress work and kind of online stuff that you do.
Sure. So my bio always says I have an oversized garden, but that's actually an allusion to my 70-acre organic farm that I ran for the last 25 years in Western Colorado. I've had like a CSA farm there with my family, and I haven't been doing that for the last few years. We still have the place, but it's definitely a big part of my life. Between the computer world and the farming world, kind of teetering between those two extremes every year when I had my own business before I was working for 10Up. So that's one thing, I guess, a little fact about myself. So I grew up, all over the world, but really settled in Colorado and raised my kids there. I have two grown kids now. They're like 17 and 20, so pretty grown up. Both seniors, like one in high school and one in college. But we spent a lot of time getting on the rivers. That was a big activity for our family. Mm-hmm. So I've done quite a bit of river rafting over the years in Colorado and Utah. Pretty much every summer, that was an activity for us.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Those are big things. And the last thing that always surprises people is that I play West African music, and I also play the imbira, which is a thumb piano from Zimbabwe. So sometimes you'll hear me plunking around on my imbira to get my mind off of coding.
Okay, you just blew my mind in so many different ways. This is so funny and cool. Never knew about the farming. That's amazing. Yeah. I actually started off school in an ag school farming too, so close to my heart. Does that have anything to do with the round earth handle?
Yeah, that's the name of our farm.
Okay.
So apologies
so
in advance.
If we go back far enough, will we see things about CSA listed
oh, yeah.
There?
The CSA was called Turkey Hill CSA, so it had like a separate name, but there's a website and you can read about the boxes. We had like a newsletter online, so you can go back through the years and see pictures.
Oh, the internet and what it saves, eh?
Yeah. And we started long enough ago that we still have like paper newsletters and stuff that we were doing. So, but the internet helped for sure when it came around.
Wow. Okay, cool. So that is great background information. I think I've even met your son before, traveled with you a little bit, right?
So yeah, he comes to WordCamps. He loves it.
Nice. And that instrument is one of the coolest ones, especially once you learn how to play with your thumb coming up too. That's awesome. I look forward to hearing you rock out on it sometime. Pocket one in a travel cam. So, all right. We get to know you a little bit. I know that you have done a lot with JavaScript, and I've even, we've kind of back-to-back taught some workshops together. I've asked you questions about things, sat in on your workshops. We're going to get to this all eventually and kind of where you're at now and everything you've done. But let's get in our JavaScript way, way back time machine. And if I were to ask you, do you remember your first lines of JavaScript? Does anything come to mind in that regard?
Yeah, I don't really remember the first JavaScript that I wrote. When I first started doing web work, JavaScript was not really even a thing, right? Mm-hmm. It was like Netscape Navigator, and anything sophisticated you were doing was on the server. And at that point, it was a lot of Java I was writing.
Oh, wow.
And I think,
okay.
At some point, I started using JavaScript and jQuery to do kind of simple interactions on page where, maybe there was like a data table that I had built for someone and they needed to be able to click on a cell and open up like a pop-up that gave them more information. I remember doing like little snippets of JavaScript that were like opening windows, things that we probably do with CSS now, but like previously had to do with JavaScript.
Oh, yeah.
And probably write it like with jQuery. Like I think I probably wasn't writing much vanilla JavaScript back in the day. I pretty much hopped right to jQuery. And then, you know, I about 5 years ago, I got involved in WordPress core. I was already building sites for clients in WordPress, but I decided that I should get involved in the open source community and give back to the project that was driving my livelihood. And also, someone had recommended to me that as a way to improve my coding skills, because I was kind of a solo coder out in the deserts of Western Colorado doing my own thing without any peers to review my code or any need really for my code to do anything beyond what it was designed to do. You know, it didn't have to look pretty. No one else had to use it. Totally. So part of my getting involved with Core was really about bettering my own, you know, skills. And the very first ticket that I solved in WordPress Core was 22919, which was...
pull it up, folks.
Yeah, ticket 22919. And it's a hilariously small, insignificant bug, right, where, like, in the gallery settings, if you select 3 is the default number of columns, and the short code would still have the, like, value equals 3, columns equals 3, even though it was the default. And normally that wouldn't be there for the default.
Ah, interesting.
And it turned out that it was a loose typing JavaScript bug where the default was the number 3, but the comparison was a string comparison to the string 3. And it was a full equality, you know, triple equal thing. So it failed, and it was needed to be changed to a string. So the fix is literally one line, but I was so ecstatic when it was accepted, right? I mean, it probably took me like 5 hours to figure out where the bug was and, like, trace through all the JavaScript. You know, I think that's, like, kind of the beginnings of my really starting to get into JavaScript, because it was, like, the first thing that I did in Core. And then the next really big thing that I did in Core was help rebuild the revision screen. And that was, you know, for 3.6. So that was kind of, like, the following year. And I spent, like, 6 months of my life, I kind of, like, put a lot of other client work aside and really dug into this project. It was a group of us that were kind of on a team working on rebuilding the revision screen, doing a lot of, like, design mock-ups and early prototypes. And then we at some point decided we were going to build it in Backbone because we were building other things in Backbone and Core. And I just took a stab at it. I had never really done anything in Backbone, but I pulled down the docs. I looked at some other projects. We had sort of, like, some mock-ups, and I just built, like, a pretty functional prototype. That did all the things. And then Daryl Coopersmith came in, and he was kind of a real lead JavaScript developer. He's the guy who did the media in WordPress Core, and he's no longer involved in the project, but at the time he was super involved, and he basically ripped all my code apart.
Ooh.
He took all the functionality out, and he restructured the thing because Backbone really doesn't give you much structure, and the way that I had done it was very organically, and he sort of, like, was like, let's reorganize this. And he handed it back to us kind of empty of functionality, but very well organized. And then we just basically took that code that we had written for all the little kind of parts of it and put it back into the structure. It was a gentle correction, you know. I think I was successful there because I was willing to take the critique and sort of double down and put the work into it. And we wound up with something that I think, like, really works well. Some people don't like the slider or whatever, but in terms of, like, an experience compared to what we had before, it was a really vast improvement. The experience of using the revision screen for me, it was just, like, a real validation of, like, what you can do in JavaScript, you know, and of course at that time, like, there were all these new apps coming out that things like Gmail were really improving and turning into real full blown types of experiences. And I was kind of excited by the possibilities. And then after that, I kind of got into that niche of being the JavaScript guy. Not that I do PHP stuff as well, but I really did wind up focusing quite a bit on JavaScript. I wound up going around in WordCamp speaking about Backbone and revisions and WordPress, trying to educate the community a little bit about what we were doing. And then even at 10UP, I've sort of gotten pulled into now working on a team, so I'm not, like, a solo person anymore where I have to have all the skills. I've gotten to focus a little bit more on JavaScript and let some of my CSS skills and other skills kind of not keep growing, you know. So that's kind of one of the benefits of being on a team.
Wow, what a story. I mean, I want to almost back up and unpack this a little bit and ask you about some things along the way with this, because first of all, I love that it was a typeset error. So for those of y'all who haven't programmed in too many languages, some languages you have to declare this is going to be an integer and this value will always stay an integer.
Right.
JavaScript being loosey-goosey as it is, you could kind of swap stuff around, right? So you found something where they weren't adding up. And the fact that you had a little Java experience, I'm sure, made that error more clear to start, I'm guessing.
It did. And it is like those types of errors are they creep into JavaScript kind of unexpectedly, and they bite people who are new to the language. I think it's, I saw a talk, I was just at Node, the Node Summit, and I saw a talk on TypeScript, which is a super cool subset of JavaScript that introduces strict typing.
Yes.
Really as a way to catch errors before you get to running your code. Because with strict typing, you can catch those types of errors actually in the editor, essentially, in the IDE. It is a type of bug that I had seen before, but I won't say that it was easy for me to find. It took a long, long time to decipher it. And that's actually one of my favorite things, honestly, about JavaScript and learning JavaScript, is being able to get into the browser, get into the debug console, pause the code while it was running. That's the kind of stuff that I had been familiar with doing previously in Java and having a really nice integrated development environment. Being able to do that in the browser and just kind of like live code stuff was great for my style of learning and just like tinkering with things.
Well, and that leads me to the next thing. So you said your style of learning and tinkering with things. So for some folks who don't have a background in any programming, learning JavaScript also includes learning programming. You had some of that background. How did you approach learning JavaScript, the language? Like, did you use certain resources or tools? Do you just focus on the syntax? Do you just kind of pick up as you go? I'm curious about.
I'm reaching down here to get my resources that I brought out so that I could promote them. This book, JavaScript, The Good Parts, is like essential reading. I've probably read it like 5 times. And Douglas Crockford, the author, also has great videos online. Yeah. And really his speaking is so insightful because he talks about kind of the decisions that went into the making of the language, which was built very quickly, and also just sort of some of the philosophies of the language, the things that are good and bad about decisions that they've made. And so if you don't really like, I love reading books, like, and just having this book open when I'm not at my computer and just at my table over breakfast or whatever, and I'm just looking through reading stuff. Sometimes I'll learn things differently that way. Mm. But if you like videos, his videos are just awesome. The other one, once you get through that and feel like you have a really good understanding of the good parts of JavaScript, is this one.
Hey, I'm rereading that right now.
Secrets of the App. Secrets, you got to reread these because you read them one time and you're like, oh, I think I understood that. Yeah. And then like the third time, you're like, I think I really understand that now. So once you really understand JavaScript, you'll understand why there's a ninja on the front of why there's a samurai on the front of the ninja book. That has to do with the loose typing. That's the joke. But anyway, those two books really were really great for me, and I did read them multiple times, and just some of the like really deep concepts of JavaScript that are different than PHP that you need to learn, things like closures and prototypical inheritance and all those like crazy concepts, and just some of the asynchronous nature and the style of how we write things in JavaScript, the modular style of it, of modern JavaScript. Some of those things you just pick up over time. Some of them you can read about and they kind of make sense, but they don't really make sense until you use them for something.
Yeah.
So getting to me, the resources are like these books and online things, but the real learning thing is actually getting involved in some kind of project. You know, if you're independent, ideally it's a client paying you to build something for them. Yes. But if it's not, maybe it's you taking your personal time to get involved in WordPress core. We have a zillion JavaScript tickets open. There's several really big, exciting projects happening, like the Gutenberg editor, which is all JavaScript. The REST API team just announced that they're focusing on two pretty big JavaScript things, which is the replacement for the list table screen, which is a post list screen. And it's used all throughout WordPress, so not just post list, but any list view that you see in WordPress is the list table. And they're working on rebuilding that with JavaScript. And then the other one is the setting screen, rebuilding that with JavaScript. So the user setting screen. So those are our focuses right now in WordPress core, and they would be great for a way to get involved. There's especially Gutenberg has a really great issues on their GitHub where they have new good first bugs. Obviously, if you've never done anything in React, it's going to be like a learning curve to get into these projects.
Yep.
But there are a lot of willing people to help out with that, and there are some kind of smaller bugs that maybe don't involve understanding everything that's happening in the whole project.
Well, let's harp on this for a second because I would not say that it is an uncommon trend for some folks that we look to as JavaScript folks in our community like yourself that working on an open source project, working on WordPress or a plugin or something has been really valuable for a number of reasons. So, you know, you had a little bit of programming back experience. You jumped into Backbone without really knowing it and core stuff there. Do you think, and I'd like to assume so, but love to hear if you think it's an encouraging thing to do of folks that are maybe kind of on the fence, maybe they played a little bit, maybe they haven't yet, but they're smart folks who pick up stuff quick. Like, do you think that more folks should be hopping into these contributing areas with all the new JavaScript that's going on?
I think so, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great way to, it's a really supportive community is one thing. That's like true. you get really good feedback. I've seen that again and again, even on the Gutenberg project, which is honestly is a bunch, mostly the developers who are very active there are from Automattic. They're not, they're involved in WordPress 4, but it's not necessarily the core team. But they're very good at giving feedback. So when you are working on a pull request or you open an issue, they will give you very detailed code feedback on all of your work. And that is just invaluable as a programmer. It's like being in code school, you know, like and I think you have to be humble and you have to not be attached to you being right, because sometimes focus on a narrow problem, and especially with something like WordPress Core, like if you're working on core tickets, a lot of times there's greater ramifications or there's a history behind why something is some way that you might not agree with, but you can't necessarily change. But I do think being involved in these types of projects, you know, any kind of tinkering that you can do, if you're a plugin developer or a theme developer and you just want to take something on your theme or plugin and rebuild it in JavaScript, and even starting with something like Backbone, people like to poo-poo Backbone, but it is still widely used in WordPress 4. It's not going away. It really hasn't changed much in years. It's a great little library for building simple things. It's not going to, like, hurt your ability to learn React if you know Backbone. It maybe will enhance it. So, you know, I think any of the libraries you could pick. Vue is a great library that people are really excited about that has sort of a templating built into it. So it's a little more familiar to people coming from PHP. React is definitely a big leap for people, but definitely worth getting into. It has some really great attributes that are exciting once you start to build things with it.
So with these kind of frameworks, and this is a perfect segue as well, of along with your story, you know, mentioned getting into Backbone. I'm sure since then you've poked around with Vue and gotten to know React a bit. What's your personal approach for learning a framework? Because a framework is a little bit different than a language to learn. And I'm just curious what you do when you're like, okay, now I'm going to go learn some React. Now I'm going to go learn Vue. Now I'm going to pick up Backbone.
Yeah. Well, obviously having the documentation page open, like with the Backbone documentation, I love they have a great annotated source code. So I do like looking at the source code. That's something I've learned in WordPress 4. When I want to see how a function works, I'll just go look at the source code and see how it works. and the same thing is true in React. I actually have started looking at some functions in React to understand what they're actually doing, trying to understand them, make them a little less magical. I do like watching videos from time to time, although I never really seem to have the time for it. But I definitely have learned some really cool stuff from watching some of the React videos. I think mostly it's just getting into a project. I will often download, like I did a big React build last year or a year and a half ago now for WAMU, which is the NPR station. And it was a super exciting project. The driving factor was trying to have a persistent audio player. So it's a great use case for a single page app. Single page apps, you had to have like an iframe or a pop-up or something to have persistent audio. But in addition to that, it was also like importing 140,000 articles from Drupal and a whole bunch of other complicated stuff. And it was also my first time building something with React and also my first time really using Webpack. You know, so a lot of firsts. And I think when TenUp, you know, partnered with this client, we told them, like, this is, you know, we are going to be learning along the way, and we're going to spend extra hours. We're not going to charge you for all our hours. We're making a good deal with you so that you can afford to do this project with us. Cool. And obviously, I'd done a lot of JavaScript, but not built a big thing with React. So what I did was I looked at what was out there. I looked at the Us2 project, which was an open source project that was built with React on top of WordPress. I looked at quite a few boilerplates for progressive web apps, which is the style of app that we were looking to build. So I downloaded the boilerplates, run the NPM, run the build, try to understand how they built their Webpack. I wound up basically starting from scratch because I didn't really want to start with a full blown boilerplate, and I didn't really find one that would like work for all of our needs. Also, one thing with React is that it is evolving so rapidly that if you were looking at like a boilerplate thing from 6 months ago or 9 months ago, it could be pretty out of date with what the current thing was.
Yeah.
So a lot of looking at examples, a lot of tinkering. I do definitely go online and read the documentation. The React documentation is excellent. The documentation really varies. Webpack documentation was horrible at the time we started that project.
Oh, interesting, because it's so put together now.
It's so great now. At the time, it was literally, there was a message on the documentation page that said, like, this is a work in progress. Like, you know, so that, you know, and I know I've worked with other projects like that where the documentation is very scattered or isn't kept up to date with the changes in the project, and that's very frustrating.
Wow. So one of these things about frameworks is they could be structured a lot of different ways, and you mentioned too when you approached Backbone that it was given back to you in a completely different restructured thing. What's your experience been in learning about app architecture or JavaScript architecture and how you kind of structure everything, which is a little bit different, right, than just being able to code it straight out? And I'm wondering, how do you pick something like that up? Because it could be difficult.
Right. I would say I'm still learning those things. I don't consider myself like a master architect. But I do think, like, when we're talking about architecture in JavaScript in an app, we're talking about data flow. We're talking about state management. We're talking about how do the different components of the app how do they communicate with each other. With Backbone, we used... in core, at least, we took this approach of like a messaging bus where there's like a global object that everything kind of triggers and listens for events on. With React, we took the Redux approach. And I did watch those videos from Dan Abramoff, probably some of my favorite videos.
So
and he
good.
Has another series now. Yeah, he's so good at explaining. And Redux is a really fundamentally very simple concept. It's a lot of boilerplate when you start out, but I love the way that it centralizes state management. The way that the pure functions are testable, the way that it provides a predictable data flow. And some of the problems like that we solved in WMU.org, for example, around asynchronous data loading, were not really solved at that time in React. And now people have, in his second set of videos, he explicitly talks about how you do those things. I'm kind of curious to see if how we chose to do them. I mean, what we chose works, but I don't know if, you know, it is really, I guess I follow thought leaders and try to learn from them. Like, I really do think that you know, and it's not like Dan Abramoff, when he came up with Redux, it's not like he invented that, right? It's based on other languages and other people's approaches to state management. It's just that he did a really beautiful implementation and explained it really well. So I would say that I don't really have a grand vision for JavaScript architecture. It depends a lot on the project, I think, the scope of the project.
Yeah, completely.
But I do feel like following these like certain patterns, like the Redux pattern, kind of lends itself to a certain type of architecture. And at least I have a good bit of confidence in those tools or approaches. But I don't really have a set like overall architecture that I feel is best, or even a way to honestly to decide like whether one thing is better than the other. And often I feel like with JavaScript there is no sort of like right way to do things. Sometimes in WordPress core there's like a WordPress way to do things, but in JavaScript there's often many different approaches. And I focus more on the style of the code, making sure the code is like very well documented internally, a lot of inline comments, a lot of white space, you know, those kind of code style things. When I find myself writing, it's kind of like standard programming stuff. You know, when I'm writing code I'm repeating myself, I will put that in a helper function. One thing I really have started to learn is how modular modern JavaScript is. Like, one of the things we're working on now in WordPress core is we're coming out with, NPM packages. Hmm. I don't know if you've been following this. So we have, a WordPress weekly JavaScript meeting that we've started on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in the core JS channel in Slack.
Yes. Join in, folks.
Yeah, it's been really exciting to see the diversity of people that are getting involved there. Because we do have a sort of not that many people involved in JavaScript and core. So it's great to see more people coming in. And one of our goals is to kind of connect to the wider JavaScript community and not just our somewhat insular WordPress community. And part of that effort is releasing these NPM packages. So NPM, if you're not familiar, package repository up there. When you're working in JavaScript, you can just type like, NPM install and some package that you want to do something in your project. And so now WordPress is releasing our own packages. And that's at npmjs.com/org/WordPress. I can give you these links at the end too. And it's really exciting to see us releasing like code that we've had for a long time and actually releasing it to the wider community and saying, hey, here's this little bit of JavaScript that's maybe useful for other people. So I guess one of the things that I'm getting out of that experience is how modular everything is, because as I've moved code over from work before to being in the packages library, one of the things that I've been asked to do by other developers is split it up so that it's not this monolithic file, which we did with media in core, but a lot of other stuff in core is not done that way. So you basically split up your code into basically essentially one function, often one function per file. And then when you need that function, you import that function into another location. And that kind of style is somewhat new to me, and it definitely involves having a build chain in whatever you're working on.
Totally.
But I do like the way, I do like that approach, that sort of architectural approach. And I think React also lends itself to a certain approach because of its, composable nature, because of the way you compose elements in React. Like you do in HTML, and that also lends you to again breaking up the code into very reusable pieces.
It is so amazing how, and it's a good thing I think too, the modular direction of things, the reusability. I found in teaching this how many different times I could just copy one thing from one place that we learned into another, and it just works, and that's such a good feeling, and a nice one. And wow, we've talked about so much, and you have gotten into so many good things. I want to ask you a billion questions about all your projects in core and how people get more into the Backbone client, which I'm a big fan of. I get questions a lot. How do I work with the media library? This doesn't make sense, even though I've seen, is it Eric Lewis's little tutorial plugin? So these are all huge questions that we could take a ton of time, maybe like 1 or 2 minutes each on. I'd love if you could comment on the Backbone client, which I've been teaching and using a lot more of. Big fan, encouraging folks because it's in core and comes with a lot, as well as maybe the media library for folks that want to extend or work with that a little bit. Or is that going to completely change as well? With
it may, it may, but I still think it's probably worth learning how to use the current media library because it's not changing anytime really soon.
Okay.
But they are talking about that as a future potential project. The WP API client, I sort of took that over as the lead developer on that like a year and a half ago. And actually this young man at WordCamp US, Jesse, made a great suggestion, which was instead of hard coding all of the models and collections, that we actually parse the schema that the API provides. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the WP API client is a JavaScript backbone-based client that's in WordPress core that you can just enqueue by doing WP enqueue, WP-API. And what it provides is models and collections for all of the endpoints in the REST API. So there's an endpoint that gives you a list of posts. That becomes a Backbone collection that contains that list of posts. There's an endpoint that gives you a single post. That becomes a Backbone model that represents a single post. And it's sort of a helper library, so you can do these very simple, when you want to get a post, you just do like, var post equals new wp.api.post, and you have this model that's a post object, and it can use all that Backbone goodness, like the saving. It can save to the REST API, so you can save your data, you can pull your data. It also handles cookie-based authentication. Has some helpers built in for doing things like get author, get categories on post objects. So it has just sort of like some syntactical sugar to make it really easy to work with the REST API. And I should say, like, even though it's built on Backbone, it doesn't mean you have to only use it in a Backbone project. So for example, you can use Gutenberg to connect the React-based editor that they're building to the REST API. Not because, you know, but because it was the easiest tool for the job, essentially, because it sort of makes it super easy. There is also a Node client that Catam has that provides a somewhat similar approach, but a different like API for how you interact with it. This client is specifically designed for when you're building something inside WordPress.
Yeah.
Although I am definitely considering also releasing it as an NPM package if I can figure out how that's useful.
I bet you are.
So that was a really fun project. We're still working on it. We just added a couple helpers that the Gutenberg team needed. So it's definitely an ongoing development, but it is in core, and I'm really excited that it got into core. And it is like, if you're going to use the REST API in a JavaScript project, it's sort of like the easiest way to get going.
And where do folks go for documentation or more on this? Have you done WordCamp
talks or
tutorials?
I have done some talks on it. I don't know if I'm... Yeah, I have done some on the WAPA client. You'd have to look at like WordCamp TV to see which ones exactly. And then there is a documentation on the handbook. There's a whole section on it.
Cool.
If you go to the WordPress handbook and then click on REST API, there's a whole page on the JavaScript client. Probably does need some updating. We've added a couple features that didn't really work in the initial release.
Nice.
They weren't documented, like the ability to connect to additional REST APIs, so you can use your client and then connect to multiple REST APIs, and it creates like endpoint objects for each of those with their own set of models and collections. A couple other things like that that we've added or improved since we originally released it. But it really is like pretty simple what it does. The sort of magic of it is that it parses the schema. So if you add your own custom post type and expose it in the REST API, or your own custom endpoint and expose it in the REST API, the client will parse those and they will appear as objects for you automatically. So that's pretty magical. We're sort of talking about, there are certain things that that are not exposed in the schema, like I don't know from the client perspective. Like for example, we have this very special me endpoint, which is for your own user object.
Yes.
But it's different than all the other endpoints because of the way it's structured. And right now, the client decides whether something's a model or collection based on the endpoint URL, and because models always end with like a regex. Exception. So now we have like a hard-coded exception in there for me, and also now the settings endpoint. So we need some way actually in the API, in the schema, to expose, hey, this is a model, this is a collection, this represents a single item, this represents plural, multiple
Interesting.
Items. We don't have that. So there's some interaction too with like the REST API itself and kind of growing together, but it's a pretty stable tool. It's been used, you know, quite a bit by people in production. It was available as a plugin when the REST API was available as a plugin as well. So we've had it around for a while. And it's super exciting to see it in core. In terms of the media library, I think there are some well-established patterns for extending the media library. I really like the there's a plugin from Felix Arntz that's like the taxonomies. It adds taxonomies and categories to the media library, so it adds category and like tag dropdowns, and leverages the fact that media items are post objects basically. And so you can and what it does though is it adds those into the media library itself, so that you can filter by categories and tags, and both in the media grid, which is actually separate from the media modal that you get to when you add media. So in both of those, he's managed to add it, and he uses the approach that you basically have to use, where you extend the base objects that Core provides with your own functionality. So I think those, like looking at one of those, like his code is, it's open source. You just download the thing, look at how it works. That's the approach that you need to use to extend media right now. There is a ticket open in Core to change that and make it easier to extend media. And one of the big things that I've been working on for years is WP Hooks, which is a hooks library.
Yes, tell us.
Yeah. So for all of the PHP programmers out there who use WordPress, we're very familiar with our Hooks API. It's probably the number one thing about WordPress that makes it so extensible, that makes it so backwards compatible. This great ability to hook in at anywhere that an action is fired, or to filter the values that are run through a filter that are all over Core. And we have a little bit of this in JavaScript in Core right now. We have certain types of events that we trigger, like document menu added, for example, or when TinyMC initializes. We fire off these events like document trigger some event name, and you're supposed to, with your JavaScript, like listen for that event so that you can respond to it.
Yeah.
But we don't have any way of filtering data, so we don't have any way of saying, like, here's the default values for the media library, run it through this filter, and you can change it however you want.
Yeah.
We also don't have any way of assigning priorities to those things. So that's what the WP Hooks library is all about. It's about providing a JavaScript library that matches our PHP functionality. So we get all the, like, add filter, do action, you know, apply filters, all those same exact things that we have in PHP now exist in JavaScript. So this is a library that's been around for like 5 years. It's been on GitHub. It was developed originally by this guy, Carl Danley. There's a ticket that I probably should know the number offhand, but I'll give it to you in a minute. But the ticket has been worked on. Many people have commented on it. There's probably like 50 different comments, or maybe 100. And just recently, we moved it to the packages repository. And actually moving it to GitHub sparked this whole new level of involvement. And I think also because the Gutenberg team is looking at it, they're trying to figure out how to provide extensibility inside Gutenberg.
Yeah.
And they're looking at hooks. And I'm basically – I'm committed to getting hooks into WordPress core regardless, because I think we need it for our existing 35,000 lines of JavaScript. You know? I mean, Gutenberg is exciting and it's the big new thing, but we also have this legacy of stuff we need to support and make extensible, like the media library that's not going away anytime soon, and all the other things that are built in JavaScript core. But it's super cool to see what's happened. So in the last month or two, we've added a whole bunch of new tests to the hooks. We've also addressed some really thorny issues like recursion, like what happens when you call a hook when you're running inside a callback that's already hooked on that hook, or things like what happens when you add a hook on a hook that's already running, or you remove a hook that's like not hasn't run yet, you know, like all these kind of really complicated, scary things that you don't want to think about. And we've actually addressed them all and have tests for them. So I think it's in a really good place. We recently have decided to add a namespacing variable to make it easier to remove hooks, so that you can always remove a hook. So each hook that you add has to be named, essentially, not just provide a callback function.
Yep.
And those changes have come about through feedback from different people in the community, and that's been really helpful. And I'm super excited to see that get into core as well.
I went off
topic there, but I think what I'm getting at is like it is really hard to extend media, but hopefully it'll get easier.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn how to do it, like, look at a good plugin like Felix's to see like the correct approach. It feels a little like when you look at the code, it seems like, wow, this is really how I have to do it. But yeah, that's actually how you have to do it. And it does work well.
Awesome. That answers everything. Great. Folks, go rewind this last few minutes, watch that again. And yeah, I think that this is some good advice in this regard. So we could probably talk for hours more about all of these things, but I want to kind of bring up the big question that all of this leads up to. And so, you know, we remember back 2015 WordCamp US, Matt Mullenweg learned JavaScript deeply. There was, I think what happened was a huge peak in interest and buzzwords, and then that kind of died out. But now there's this huge peak in actual development happening and like it getting real. So I'm curious your thoughts on what does it mean to you personally, and maybe as someone who works at 10UP and, you know, in the professional world and has this experience as a core contributor, what does it mean to learn JavaScript deeply? And then how do you know how far along the path you are and how much further you have to go, and what's really necessary? How deep do we go, right? And what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, first, I guess I want to start by just acknowledging that we're all always learning. There's always someone ahead of you who knows more than you do, and there's always someone behind you that you can turn around and help who doesn't know as much as you do. There's always new stuff coming out in JavaScript. I think it's like impossible to really be an expert. I would never claim that I'm an expert. Because whatever my knowledge is, like, it's already outdated. Like,
yeah.
I do think, like, some of that stuff that I talked about, like understanding closures, understanding context or the this keyword, understanding asynchronous operations, and then just getting really comfortable with the tools, you know, NPM, understanding like Webpack, at least like a basic understanding of Webpack. I did watch a really good video. I I seem to watch more videos than I actually do in this talk, but I did watch a really good video from a woman about Webpack is not magic, and it explained how Webpack does the include and export, import and export, like how it actually technically functions. And I highly recommend it, actually, because it's she actually explains, it's like in one page of code, she explains how it works, like from a really simple perspective. And to me, sometimes when things are magical and I don't really understand them, I feel like I never learn them. Yeah. And so having some, you know, watching those kinds of videos where someone explains like the inner workings of something, there's another great one about Git that's called Git for Ages 4 and Up. those kinds of talks where you're really kind of understanding the basic fundamental things about how a tool is built. And then just getting really comfortable with your tools like Git and NPM and Webpack and you know, and I think like just basically doing JavaScript, like doing things in JavaScript, the practice part of it.
Yeah.
And it is sort of like muscle memory of learning, you know, like for example, you learn coding standards that way, where you just sort of start typing to the correct coding standards because you get used to that. You get used to seeing it that way, and it looks wrong when it's not that way. And it's the same thing with sort of some JavaScript style stuff. And I think it takes time. I think you have to, you know, you have to be persistent. You have to just kind of stick at it. Also, like the debugger tools in Chrome, really understanding how to use those. I'm sure the Firefox debugger tools are also great now, but I mostly use Chrome, and they keep improving those tools like constantly.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm pretty good at using those tools, and they're very powerful. And being able to debug JavaScript is a huge asset, especially in core. There's hundreds of tickets open that are JavaScript tickets that need people to test them and figure out where the bugs are. So I think like learning it deeply is basically kind of getting a real experience of using the language, seeking out projects where you can actually use JavaScript to build something, you know, seeking out whether it's a new feature or a new panel for your plugin or a new client project where you sell them on building some part of their site in JavaScript. Maybe it's not a whole site, but maybe it's some interactive feature of the site.
Yeah.
And explaining to people why, you know, some kind of experience like that could draw visitors in or keep visitors on their site. At 10UP, like I'm very much seeking out projects that are JavaScript based, and mm-hmm. it's something that we are trying to embrace because it does seem to be something that is sort of not just the direction of WordPress core, but the direction of the web. I mentioned I went to this Node Summit,
yeah.
and it's incredible what people are building on top of Node now. And it goes all the way from, you know, the Internet of Things all the way up to enterprise. So I think JavaScript is coming. Like Gutenberg is a big heads up for people. The fact that is replacing not just TinyMCE, but in fact the entire edit page experience. So for our company, for 10UP, we spent a huge amount of effort customizing that admin experience for our clients.
Oh yeah,
you know, the post editing experience. And we create these sort of bespoke experiences that are often about very customized data. So we will need to learn how to be building those types of features in Gutenberg in the future, when that does get merged in and become the default editor. You know, we're going to need to be able to bring some of those same experiences that we've built previously in PHP, maybe with some JavaScript, and now bring them into this world where it's completely in JavaScript. So it's something that very much I think people are thinking about now. And I think like in core, we're going to see more, like I mentioned, the list views, you know, the settings page, we're going to see more and more stuff get replaced with JavaScript. And so that means if you're building stuff on top of core and you want to interact with those things, you want to extend them, you're building a plugin, you want to add something to the settings page, you're going to need to know some JavaScript and be able to read JavaScript and understand it the same way we've all learned PHP or whatever by reading through code. JavaScript is very friendly like that. Like once you start to get into it, it's not really that different.
No,
from
it's PhD. Fun. It's good.
And I do think like it's a very welcoming community of people that are like at least the people that I'm involved with in core. We're very supportive of people making an effort, you know, and I think just showing up and getting involved and finding some way to spend your time doing JavaScript, whether it's getting paid to do it or volunteering your time. I found for me, like when I was working on a big feature like that revisions thing, it was super motivating that I was working on this feature that was going to be in WordPress core.
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, find it incredibly gratifying to get even the smallest of fixes into WordPress core, because there's so many people that use it, I feel like it has an impact. So I do really encourage people to get involved in this core stuff. I know it's like not really, the JavaScript isn't really necessarily the big thing that we focus on core, but there's definitely quite a bit of JavaScript in core and quite a bit that needs help and quite a bit you can learn from, even if it's like, don't do things like this. And I do think that was smart of Matt to tell people to, I mean, he was kind of a little bit of ahead of the curve, right? And I think over at Automatic, they're very much pushing that curve with Calypso and now with Gutenberg. They are very much thinking about the future, the long-term future of WordPress, which I think is great, because as a project, haven't done a great job of that in the past, of plotting out a path forward. We've tended to just focus on the things that people are interested in working on at any given time.
Wow, what a solid answer, both in terms of the practical skills you need, the practice that you need, the absolute need for it, because more and more stuff is changing into JavaScript, whether it's in core, whether you're extending it. I also want to second folks getting out and getting involved with these projects. Like, now is the time to jump in and be a core contributor with JavaScript stuff. There's space, there's need. You still have time to learn it as you're doing it, and it's going to be a very different landscape 2-3 years from now, right? So definitely take this opportunity. And if you're listening to this, like, chances are, yes, you're fine. You could pull it off, at least help out in some way, right? Because you're already kind of tuned into what's going on and what's coming. So Adam, I just wanted to say a huge thank you, one, for all the work that you've done, and two, for coming on and talking about it with us, man. I've learned so many cool things about you, from CSA farming to some of this JSE stuff, and I will continue to come to you for questions and answers, and you're going to be probably at more WordCamps coming up. How can people reach out and get in touch with you?
Yeah, probably the best way is just on Slack, on the WordPress core Slack. So anyone can get a free account there if you don't already have one. And I'm just Adam Silverstein on there. I'm also at Round Earth on Twitter, but I'm not constantly on Twitter. But I don't know. Either one of those would probably be good.
Cool.
Good way to contact me.
All right, so go find him in Slack. Join the JavaScript Slack discussions. I've trolled a few, but I need to get back in those as well myself.
Yeah.
And yeah, thanks again a ton for coming on the show, man.
Sure, it was super fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching the show. If you like it, please subscribe. We're on iTunes and YouTube. You can get the video or audio format of the show. And we will continue each month to bring you leading folks in the field of JavaScript and WordPress, sharing their stories, their advice for all of us. This was a great episode. I encourage you to go back and listen again to really get all the tidbits and links and things like that we discussed. So until next time, keep on learning and happy JavaScripting.